The second ingredient is self-approval. We can't expect others to love us more than we love ourselves, can we? Self-dislike blocks growth. On the other hand, humbly approving of yourself strengthens your relationships, increases your productivity, and affects every part of your world. Your level of self-approval paints itself on your face. It colors your voice and programs your thoughts, your feelings, your words, your actions. You know, much of the problem with poor self-approval today can be connected to the mass media. We're bombarded by pictures of beautiful, perfect, skinny women. Today's woman is shown as gorgeous, exuding self-confidence, always young, never ill, doesn't make mistakes or appear foolish, never loses her cool, and of course, never gains a pound. She's always provocative and sensuous and perfectly put together. That woman is an absolute total myth. If we compare ourselves to that kind of woman, naturally our self-approval will suffer. However, those who break free of this distorted image of woman and see their unique gifts clearly will be happier and have higher self-approval ratings. In the dictionary, the word clear, this is the Random House Dictionary, it has more than 60 meanings. Many of the meanings have to do with freedom. Free from obstruction, from guilt, freedom from blame, confusion, limitation, debt, doubt, uncertainty, and so on. Its ultimate meaning is, quote, able to serve perfectly in the passage of light, close quote. Sometimes it takes a lifetime to become clear, free from baggage, clear on who we are and how we can best use our talents and gifts, and then we truly are free. How do we become clear? We mentally push away everything that creates distortion or discord with our inner compass. I'll repeat that. We mentally push away everything that creates discord with our inner compass. What is our inner compass? It's that knowledge of what's right for us, and it's deep within each of us. To become clear, we push from our lives activities or responsibilities that distract us from doing the most important things. You know, for years I lived in Southern California and then up in Washington, and I remember the first time I watched them prune the fruit trees. They pruned them and hacked them down to these little tiny stumps with these little tiny limbs. And I thought, how could this possibly be right? But what was the result? A better, more healthy fruit in the spring. During quiet meditation, you'll be able to define what are the activities and responsibilities in your life that distract you from doing the most important thing. Simply ask this question, does this distract me from doing the most important things in my life? And the answer is usually clear. Also, during times of reflection, ask yourself, exactly what do I want my life to look like in 10 years, in 5 years, in 1 year? And the steps to get there will become clear as you define your end goals. Then regarding your personal self-development, ask this, what should I be doing right now to become my ideal self? I know beautiful, talented women with very low self-esteem, low levels of self-approval. On the other hand, I know women who are plain by the standards of men whose self-approval is high. They're positive and upbeat about their abilities. What makes the difference? I'd like to suggest that mental strength, self-talk, and focus are the keys. Dale Carnegie, talking about mental strength, said, happiness doesn't depend on outer conditions. It depends on inner conditions. It isn't what we have or where we are that makes us happy or unhappy. It's what we think about it. For example, two people can be in the same place at the same time doing the same thing, and one is happy and one is miserable. Why? Because of a different mental attitude. Close quote. We all have highs and lows. One of the secrets in life is to minimize your lows, and that's a choice. Now, there are two stories that illustrate this point. Dr. Charles Garfield was on his way to have lunch in San Francisco with a friend, and he was on the Golden Gate Bridge and coming toward the toll booth when he heard some loud music. He looked around, and the other cars didn't have their windows down, and as he approached the toll booth, he realized it was coming from there. There was a guy inside just dancing, just rocking out. Well, he came up to the toll booth window, he rolled down his window, and he says, "What are you doing?" And the guy said, "I'm having a party." He said, "What about those?" as he looked down to the other toll booth people. And the guy says, "Well, what do they look like to you?" And he said, "They look like toll booths. What do they look like to you?" And the guy in the toll booth said, "They look like vertical coffins. You see, every day live people go in and they sort of die for the whole day. They just mindlessly go through the actions of their job. And then at 4:30, like Lazarus rising from the dead, they come alive again as they leave and go home. They do that every day." Well, Dr. Garfield looked at this guy and he was amazed. Here's a man who has a philosophy about his job in a toll booth. 16 people were dead on the job, and the 17th learned how to live and live enthusiastically. And he said to the toll booth operator, he says, What makes the difference?" The guy laughed. He said, "I knew you were going to say that." He said, "I don't know why anybody thinks I have a boring job. Hey, I have a corner office, glass on all sides. I can see much of San Francisco, the Berkeley Hills, all of the San Francisco Golden Gate Bridge. Why, half the Western world comes to vacation here every year. And me, every day, I just stroll in and dance." Are you dancing through life? And if not, why not? Make the kind of choices that will allow you to dance through your days, because that is a choice. Now, the second story about how to improve our mental health tells about a Hindu master who had a very negative apprentice. Finally, he had just had enough, and he said, "I need to teach this young man a lesson." So he asked the apprentice to go get a handful of salt and bring it back to him. The apprentice obeyed and brought the salt back, and the Hindu master asked him to drop it into a glass of water and drink it. Well, the apprentice obeyed, but it was just, it was horrible. It was so bitter and nasty. And the Hindu master said, "Did you taste the salt?" He said, "Of course I tasted the salt. That was terrible." And he said, "Very well, I'd like you to go get another handful of salt and then come back and follow me." Well, when the apprentice came back, he followed the Hindu master down to a great, huge, freshwater lake. And he said, "Throw the salt out into the lake," which the apprentice did. And then he said, "Now take a drink." Well, after brushing off his hands, the apprentice leaned down and picked up some of that water, and it was just tasted wonderful and fresh and good. And the Hindu master said, "Did you taste the bitterness?" He said, "No, I didn't taste the salt at all. And he said, "Here is the lesson." The Hindu master taught, "The problems of life are pure salt, no more, no less. The amount of problems in life remain the same, exactly the same. But the amount of bitterness we taste depends on the container we put our challenges in. So when you have troubles, enlarge your sense of things. Expand your perspective. Stop being a small glass and become a lake." How do we do this? We use the principle of choice. And I thought long and hard about this. I thought, how do we become a lake? And I came up with this. Don't allow others to offend you or to pierce your dreaming heart. Take the negative behavior of others and drop their painful words into the calm expanse of your abundance mentality, your tolerant loving kindness, and watch the negativity disappear. When we understand this deeply, we get that you can be a lake, that you can refuse to be offended. You can wear a resistance raincoat, just allowing any negativity to just slide right off. In addition, you celebrate your goodness, your abilities, and you press forward no matter what. Now, we're talking about self-approval. A lovely woman named Patricia Holland once gave university students some wise counsel from which we can all learn. Pat remarked, "The battle many of you wage on an interior front concerns me. many of us create a civil war within ourselves by internalizing problems of fear, uncertainty, self-doubt, and worry, often over things we can do preciously little about. If we spend our time and energy worrying about being too tall or too short, or about our freckles or warts or big noses, then I fear we're doomed to certain defeat. The person who is engaged in such a constant internal fight has little energy and power left to win the outside battles. You can't afford to be your own worst enemy. And taking the battles inside, firing mortar shells into your very soul, is potentially one of the most damaging of all human activities. You can recover from poor grades or a misdate, but if you turn such outside matters into self-criticism, letting them damage your spirit and your self-worth and esteem, then you've begun a battle with a very high mortality rate indeed. Close quote. An interior battle. Good food for thought, isn't it? How about accepting compliments? This is another indication of weak or strong self-approval. Why are we uncomfortable accepting compliments? One of the most common reasons is that we genuinely believe we're not deserving of the compliment. For example, if you've finished a painting but it has a few flaws, you may be tempted to point out the flaws when somebody compliments you on the painting. Resist the temptation. Smile. Thank the person instead. Say something like, "Thanks. This painting took a long time and I did hope it would turn out nicely." If somebody tells you that you look nice, you don't say, "Oh, I don't look nice," you know, or I really like your dress. You say, "Oh, this, it's so old." You say, "Thank you, I like it too." Once you've done this a few times, you could then add a line of appreciation, such as, "You know, when I bought this, I wasn't sure if I made the right choice. So your compliment makes me feel much better. Thanks." Then everybody feels good. Isn't that a better way to be? How about self-talk? You know, that little voice in your head? Instead of, "I always forget at least one thing at the store," you say, "It's not like me to forget things. Next time I'll remember my list." Instead of, "I'll never look as good as her. You know, she looks great, and I'm happy with who I am." My little boy, he's 11 years old. He just brought back an assignment. It was an autobiography that he wrote at school. The very first line said this: "I like my face just the way it is." Isn't that great? That's the way we want to talk and think of ourselves. Instead of, "I'm a lousy mom. I always lose my temper." You say, "Each day I'm becoming more patient and loving." Remember, our beliefs create our experience. What we believe becomes our reality. As a man, woman thinketh in her heart, so is she, we read in Proverbs. The third part of self-approval is focus. What we focus on determines how we feel about ourselves, and what we focus on pulls us in that direction, either negative or positive. So the key is to focus on the positive. Focus on what you have, not on what you don't have. Here's a story about a kind philosopher who went into the hills each day to enjoy nature and to learn the lessons nature can teach us. Each evening on his return, he gathered the people of the village about him to impart unto them the lesson he had learned. One morning before he departed, one of his friends asked him to bring back a hawthorn twig. Another asked him to bring back a rose. A third asked him to bring a lily. The kind philosopher agreed to the requests of the three friends. As the day wore on and the evening let down her curtain, the three stood by to receive their gifts from nature. As they took them in their hands, the first said, "There's a dead leaf on my hawthorn twig." The second murmured, "There's a thorn on my rose." The third cried out, "Yes, and here's some dirt on the root of my lily." The kind philosopher took the gifts back. He removed the dead leaf from the hawthorn twig, placed it in the first friend's hand. Likewise, the thorn and the dirt from the rose and the lily. Then he said, "You have what attracted you first. I will keep the hawthorn twig, the rose, and the lily for the beauty I see in them." And the lesson is that those who grow and develop the very best in life are the men and women who see that which is good in others. Before we move on, I'd like to share the story of a woman who had a wonderful attitude right up to her last breath. This is called The Fork. There was a woman who had been diagnosed with a terminal illness and had been given only 3 months to live. So as she was getting her things in order, she contacted the pastor and invited him to come over to the house to discuss aspects of her final wishes. She told him which songs she wanted sung at the service, what scriptures she'd like read, and what outfit she wanted to be buried in. Well, the woman also requested to be buried with her favorite Bible. Everything was in order, and the pastor was about to leave when the woman suddenly remembered something very important. "There's one more thing," she said excitedly. "What's that?" came the pastor's reply. "This is very important," the woman continued. "I want to be buried with a fork in my right hand." Well, the pastor looked at the woman, not knowing quite what to say. "That surprises you, doesn't it?" the woman asked. "Well, to be honest, I'm puzzled by your request," said the pastor. And the woman explained, "In all my years of attending church socials and potluck dinners, I always remember that when the dishes of the main course were being cleared, someone would inevitably lean over and say, 'Keep your fork.' It was my favorite part because I knew then that something better was coming, like velvety chocolate cake or deep dish apple pie, something wonderful and with substance. So I just want people to see me there in the casket with a fork in my hand, and I want them to wonder, 'What's with a fork?' Then I want you to tell them, 'Keep your fork, because the best is yet to come.'"